Angus, thank you so much for coming on Science Spotlight on 2SER. I really appreciate you coming along.
You're welcome, man. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So just for the people who aren't really aware of the nomenclature, what is a mechanical watch?
A mechanical watch is something that's been around for quite a few hundred years. It is literally a mechanical device made up of springs, gears, plates put together in a certain ratio to then indicate time through hands on a dial, all revolving around the 24-hour scale and around our Earth hours, essentially. Yeah.
And so being more, a little bit more specific now, what is an observatory chronometer?
An observatory chronometer is very much a 20th century thing. It is essentially a mechanical watch that has been through the rigorous tests of an observatory. So it's been through basically, typically it's a 15 to 45 day test. Basically, it's just the most rigorous testing a mechanical watch can go through on the planet.
And so how much preparation would watchmakers have to go into? So like the GP observatory that we're talking about today, how much development would go into something like this for it to even qualify for an observatory test?
Honestly, years and years and years. So essentially the chronometer trials were a series of competitions held through between just around World War II up until late 1960s. And numerous companies, and many of which have already become obsolete, old names, current names that we hear of, Omega, Girard Perregaux, they spent a lot of money in R&D, and it's a pure scientific department. It's almost like the skunk works. They prepare it to a form where it's not even fit for the wrist. These are not meant to be for the wrist. So it's all basically at the frontier of every bit of technology at its height. At all costs, they put as much as they can into their machines for the name of precision. Essentially.
How many different watches were given the observatory certification?
Typically, they say at, for example, Neuchâtel Observatory in Switzerland, they say after all these years, after all the brands together, there were about 60% that passed certification. And this is just a little bit more than half. So every movement that was sent in was tested. But of course, like, you know, when you push everything up to that really, really fine 1% of these high performance movements, there's still, of course, a big difference between them, you know, between, you know, the little deviations can pull a watch from, you know, between being certified and not at all, and being like the highest kind of wording that the Swiss would give a good chronometer is especially good results. There's nothing with the word excellent in there. So you can tell how stringent things are.
And so what made the Girard Perregaux Observatory stand out from the rest of them? Is it a particularly standout timepiece?
Well, actually, because the observatory or watchmaking essentially was such a Western European thing, there's only one brand from the East, which is Seiko, that were able to basically compete because of just their chase for perfection. The GP really stood out because only Girard Perregaux and Seiko, after the competitions, they were the only two companies in history to sell their watches commercially, which is essentially like saying after the Formula One, you would put that engine into a road legal car and then you're still driving it. So it's actually not meant for the wrist, essentially, but they actually did it for, of course, you know, for marketing and their own, their brand building. What stood out for this watch to me is that it's made the dial, the case, everything's made in solid gold. And you can tell that it's at this kind of pinnacle of the brand's, you know, they were very proud of this because they put so much, you know, development into it. And of course the word observatory on the actual watch face, which is very hardly, like it's actually quite a rare thing to see that word, that text on the dial. Yeah.
And how many of these timepieces did they make commercially?
So after 1967, Gerard Perregaux released 662.
And how many, do you know how many are remaining in the world today, or is it something that's sort of a bit iffy?
I think with vintage, just like any vintage or antique, you just keep discovering them. Perhaps in another 5 to 10 years, more would have surfaced, or they would have completely just disappeared. So far, as much as I know, there's that I've seen around, there's about 10.
Wow, so very rare find then.
Yeah. So, and they all come in different case combinations, and some were gold plated, some were steel. And back then, I mean, the price point of it being sold commercially was in the hierarchy of stainless steel, gold plate, and solid gold. So gold plate is considered crap because they age not very well. The plating wears off. So people would literally just collect stainless steel or solid gold. And solid gold is, I think, just that extra touch of prestige to me, yeah.
How would this timepiece compare to, you know, a standard watch of the modern age?
Still okay. You know, this was a competition piece, you know, 50 something years ago. It definitely wouldn't fare against a quartz watch today, of course, because, you know, as standards become higher, when something is super accurate now, you know, you pull that back, you know, 50 years, it's like astronomical. So it would, like, on a technical sale, it wouldn't fare that well. But in terms of being a mechanical watch, it's still extremely accurate.
So how would the watchmakers at Gerard Perregaux prepare the watch for the trials? And then what tests will be actually involved in the observatory trials?
Right. There were quite a few observatories around. There was the Kew Observatory in England, the Besançon Observatory in France, Neuchâtel and Geneva observatories. They were all the ones that held these competitions, and they had different levels of certification. Basically, each company would prepare them in little wooden cases, about 10 by 10, and they would have the winder coming out the side. It's a box specially made for just holding and encapsulating the movement by itself. And so that box is very blocky. And essentially that could be put in various positions, up, down, left, right, face up, face down, so on, to emulate the wrist positions. And if they were to send watches across borders or put them on planes, they would get magnetized. And so when they landed, everything had to be recalibrated in a way. So everything to do with gravity, magnetism, of course, lubrication, you know, they had to be finely lubricated. So all the jewels in the watch had to be oiled properly with the right oils. And yeah, I mean, it's everything to basically fight against the elements, which is what they need to be, because all the springs are made of steel and they would be, you know, treated in different ways for it to compensate temperatures the best. And then the actual trials, from what I know, is about 45 days of just continuous 24-hour testing.
Far out, yeah. That seems really intense. So, you know, to have a watch sold commercially like Gerard Perregaux did with the observatory label on it would have been like a huge deal.
Yeah.
All right, Angus, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. It's really interesting to talk to you about this.
No worries. This is fun. Thanks.